Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuck sticks? What the fuckadelics? How are you? This is Mark Maron. This is WTF. This is my show. I welcome you. Right out of the gate, my guest today, Connor Oberst. Some of you know him as Bright Eyes. Some of you know him from Monsters of Folk or from the Desaparecidos, who are reuniting to release their first album in 13 years later this year. Desaparecidos. Yeah? How's that for a name? But today he's Connor Oberst on my show. His recent solo album is Upside Down Mountain. We'll talk to him in a minute. So I know most of you know about my tour, but I feel like I should run... I should run it by you again if you don't. I'm touring. I'm doing a massive tour starting at the end of March, really officially, March 20 and 21 at the Rochester, New York, the Comedy Club. I'm doing four shows to get in gear, to get my brain in the right place. Thursday, April 9th, Warner Theater, Washington, D.C. Friday, April 10th, the Trocadero, Philadelphia. Saturday, April 11th, the Wilbur in Boston. April 16th, the Barrymore Theater, Madison, Wisconsin. April 17th, Carnegie of Homestead Music Hall, Pittsburgh. April 18th, Royal Oak Music Theater, Royal Oak, Michigan. April 19th, Bluma Appel, Toronto, Ontario. April 25th, Fitzgerald in Houston, Texas. Fitzgerald's. April 26th, Southside Music Hall, Dallas, Texas. May 8th, the Neptune in Seattle. May 9th, the Vogue in Vancouver. May 10th, Davies Symphony Hall, San Francisco, California. May 14th, the Orange Peel in Asheville, North Carolina. May 15th, Charleston Music Hall, Charleston, South Carolina. May 16th, Variety Playhouse, Atlanta, Georgia. And May 17th, Joy Theater in New Orleans. Tickets are selling fast. So I better pull it together. But I've been up against the wall before. This is how I work. Push myself up against the wall. And then I line about nine of me's facing me with guns. And I have a blindfold on. And I say to the nine me's, Can you just give me a few minutes? I think I have something to say that will save my life. I think I have something to say that will prove that I'm innocent of being over. And I make my case. And then, like, they let me off. They put their guns down. They say, well, you still got to go before the judge. And that motherfucker, just another me, just sitting up there on high, like he knows what's going on. He's a little difficult because he passes judgment in a way that's not definitive. It's more sort of like, you're not guilty, but you should feel guilty. Yeah, all right, great. God damn it, man. Everything's all right, all right? I cooked a real chicken. Don't recommend it. A real chicken, like a real one. Not like one that was in a cage, not a free-range chicken, but like a chicken that was just out in the wild chicken. And you know what? I think if more people ate the real thing, like just the chicken that's out in the world, less people would eat chicken. More people would be vegetarians because it's stringy, it's weird, it's muscly, it's a little bit gamey. And that's like the good stuff. And I was like, can I have my, you know, my sad, fat caged chicken or mildly free-range chicken that's been fed something to make its thighs and breasts too big? But then I felt bad about that, putting that chicken through that. But I'll tell you, the out-in-the-wild real chicken that had a life, a little rough to eat. A new cat has arrived somewhere. I don't know where he came from. There's a couple of new cats around. Deaf Black Cat, I think, is gone. And I don't know what to do about that. I'm processing. I'm a little sad, but I think he's done. I haven't seen him. I haven't seen him around the neighborhood. A new black cat has shown up. This cat is a motherfucker. Can I say that? Sorry, kids. This cat, It's like the equivalent of a cat pit bull in its intensity. It's got this huge ass head, and it's got this muscular body, and it's got these huge balls, which means, like, I don't know if it, and it's got a massive scar on the back of its head. This thing it's just a tough fucking looking cat. He's pretty friendly. I think he's somewhat peopled, but I don't know what to do about those balls. I mean, I guess he's not coming around every day. I guess I got to get that taken care of because, like, I'm afraid he's going to fuck me. That's how intense this cat is. He's coming over and he's eating and he's just stalking around looking for something to fuck. And that's trouble. Most of the cats around here are fixed. There's another little dude around that looks exactly like an older dude I have. I don't know where that guy came from. And they just, I don't know how they make rounds. I wish I knew how cats lived, but this black cat, man, it is a badass looking cat. And I feel bad because there's part of me knows those balls have got to come off. And I don't know if I'm the guy to do it. I don't know what kind of relationship he has elsewhere. Maybe there's a dude, I picture maybe a Latino dude down the street that loves this cat, that loves its big balls, and that it's a badass cat. And then I'm going to, like, trap it, get his balls cut off, and he's going to go back to his buddy, and the guy's going to be like, "Where are your balls, yo?" And then, he'll be ostracized for not being as macho as he once was, and then maybe his head will get smaller, and then he'll just be hanging around here wondering what he should do with his life. Like me, except I'm busy, very busy. I have a full life, but yet there's part of me that's sort of like, what am I going to do with my life? What is that about? God damn, man. It's fucking crazy. All right, so why don't we talk to Connor Oberst now, and perhaps he'll play some music for us as well. I believe he...
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Will. Come on, man. When you take the stage with big shots, you don't get any moment of insecurity?
Oh, I mean, of course. Yeah. It's never easy to be like just chined up.
No problem.
Yeah.
I'm just up here with Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just up here with John Prine. Not an issue. I can handle it.
Exactly.
I saw you over there at the Greek.
You were at the show?
I went to the show.
Cool.
Well, here's the thing is, like, you know, I've known about you for a long time. And then, like, when we had the opportunity to talk, I'm like, well, now I really got to find out about him.
Sure.
So I had to go, I got to go back to when you were a kid. So you're fortunate in that you're talking to a guy that is very up to speed on songs. They're very fresh in my head. Some of them for the first time.
Okay, cool.
Like the Bright Eyes Records, I listened to Fevers and Mirrors, Lifted, and Casadega primarily.
Okay.
And the last two solo albums. Is that good? Is that a solid foundation?
Sure. That's a great starting point.
I asked these two little girls who I think that at the time you... first started doing the Bright Eyes Records must have been the primary support of what you were doing.
Yep.
Because these girls were like, they must have been like 25 and they, one of them had recognized me or something. And I was like, so are you big fans? They're like, oh yeah. I mean, since middle school. And I'm like, okay, what should I listen to? They're like, oh, Theft and Fevers and Mirrors. Those are the ones.
Nice.
So those must have been the ones that planted the seed, man.
Yeah, I would say Fevers was definitely like the first, I don't know, breakthrough, the one that people heard first, I would say.
And wait, how old were you?
I would have been 19.
So when did you start playing? I mean, because you got some notoriety before that album, though.
Yeah, I mean, my first, very first, I guess, quote unquote, records, which was really a cassette tape. Yeah. I was like 13 years old.
Right.
And me and my friends had like this little kind of make-believe label, and we made our cassettes and sold them at the local, you know, the cool music store in town. And
how does that, how did that become like, you know, the moment who decided this guy's got something?
Well, I got to give credit to a good friend of mine, this guy, Ted Stevens, who's been in a lot of amazing bands. He had a band called Lullaby for the Working Class, like in the 90s, that was rad. And then he still plays in Cursive, blah, blah, blah. But he was the first one. I mean, he's probably 4 or 5 years older than me when I was like 13. And he heard me play a couple songs, and then he offered to bring his little Tascam 4-track to my parents' house.
Yeah, man.
And recorded my first, you know, record or whatever. So
at your parents' house.
Yep.
Where, in the basement?
In the
bedroom?
In the attic.
In the attic.
Yeah.
In Nebraska. What part of Nebraska?
Omaha.
I have no real point of reference for Omaha, Nebraska.
I mean, it's an average, you know, Midwestern kind of town.
It's pretty, though. It's kind of lush in Nebraska, isn't it?
So Omaha is on the far eastern side, so it's on the Missouri River. So
yeah.
Our downtown butts up against this town called Council Bluffs in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of, they join there. And it is pretty. It's like the Missouri River Valley, so there's some hills and stuff. The rest of Nebraska, as you go west towards Denver, of course, becomes, you know, truly a desert wasteland zone.
Yeah, I think I drove through part of Nebraska once. I got some friends. There was a music scene up there in Omaha, I think, or Lincoln, right?
Yeah. And they're close together. Like, Lincoln's the college town, and Omaha's like the one real city, and they're like, you know, an hour apart.
Yeah, I knew a couple guys come through there. Like, Buck Naked was a guy. Did you ever hear of them? They were sort of like a rockabilly outfit, and they ended up in the Bay Area. But or something like that. I don't think he's around anymore.
That's like calling your band Free Beer or something, you know?
Get
people out the shows.
It was Buck Naked and the Somebodies. I don't remember what it was. That isn't actually the name. So you started playing guitar when you're what?
Like 10, maybe.
And did your parents give you the guitar?
Yeah, my dad was a musician. Not professionally, but he had a cover band that would do all the sort of weddings and dances and stuff. So he was the multi-instrumentalist. So he did some keys and he did some horn and some guitar and like backup singing. And
oh, he did everything.
Yeah, and they had, you know, they just played like, it was like the 80s, so they played, you know, whatever, Maneater or whatever was popular at the time, and he would learn the parts. And that was kind of supplemental income.
What was his regular thing?
Mutual of Omaha. He was just kind of, you know, middle.
A dude in the office?
Yeah, he worked there for, 30 years or something. So
did a lot of people, I guess a lot of people worked there.
That's the big one. I mean, there's that. There's like Union Pacific is the other, the railroad is another big one.
In Omaha.
And then like ConAgra, which is like, you know, a huge Monsanto shitty like food thing. So
sure, agribusiness.
Exactly.
Sure, just grow that shit.
Yeah.
As fast as possible.
Yeah.
And without bugs, no matter what the cost.
Exactly. And then, of course, we got Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
You know, the other...
Yeah.
Kind of big.
Well, he's trying to be a good guy now. Big, he's throwing some money back.
He is.
Yeah. Sometimes they get old, they get soft. They got a lot of money they don't know what to do with.
Totally.
Maybe it's time to help out.
Yeah. His daughter, Susie Buffett, is a pretty amazing person. She's like friends with my mom and does all kinds of like great things for people.
And what'd your mom do when you're growing up?
She worked for the Omaha Public Schools. She was a teacher and then eventually a principal.
So it was good. So you had a father that at least had a dream at some point and somehow held on to it, and there was enough instruments around the house.
Totally. I mean, they were so supportive and awesome. I mean, I had my first band when I was like 14 or something, and we even signed to like a label in New York, and like, I mean, they were crazy enough to
Bright Eyes?
No, this was called Commander Venus. This was an even earlier band.
Somebody signed you at 14?
Yeah.
They're like, we got these kids in Nebraska.
Yeah, it was a cool label, actually. This label, they're no longer a label. They're called Grass Records, and they did a bunch of cool stuff in the kind of early mid 90s, like the Wrens and Sunbrain and
a
bunch of bands. So
what was that first guitar? What was it? Nylon.
I had the Ovation with the curved back.
Yeah.
Because my dad had a big, beautiful old Dreadnought Martin that I could, when I was first starting to play, I would try to play it, but my arm like couldn't get it over the top. So
yeah.
I'd be like, And so once they realized, like, okay, I was like taking it serious enough, and it was like, you know, whatever, Christmas, whatever, and they got me this, you know, the littlest, thinnest one that I could kind of get my arm around. So,
and what wasn't the inspiration initially? Because I know you get comparisons hung on you that can't be helpful. in any way.
Yeah.
The last thing anybody wants to be is compared to Bob Dylan in some ways. I imagine it's flattering, but after a certain point, you're going to be like, oh boy.
Yeah, that was a tough one. I mean, I think that in like music journalist shorthand, that's kind of like, you know, code for they have a lot of words in their songs.
And they write a lot of them.
Yeah, or it's a weird voice. It's hard to get used to.
Prolific.
You know? Yeah. And so, but yeah, I mean, there's worse things to be called, I suppose. You know, but it is a bit, because when it's funny when people read something like that about you, like in a magazine, they take the step to think that you're saying it about yourself.
Yeah, well, you know?
And it's like, no, I never said that about myself.
Right.
Somebody wrote that, and then 1,000 other people asked me about it.
Well, it's tricky because, like, you know, I was trying to figure out, you know, what is it about what I thought about you that didn't necessarily like lock. Why didn't I lock in earlier? It's a tricky thing when you're an earnest cat, because you're a pretty earnest dude. You're not a fucking goofball.
Sure.
You know, and that comes across.
I am a goofball, but maybe not in the music. Yeah, yeah.
But are you aware of that?
I mean, I actually think that there's more humor in some of my music than people realize.
And they can hear?
But
because you're too intense?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, not so much on the early records, but I mean, in later records, I would say, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but you're aware of that.
Sure.
Yeah, because, you know, when you're young and you're prolific and, you know, it means something to you, you know, that's just a moving target for bullies and people that aren't making it and critics. And
sure.
You know,
our stuff was, I think, there was a slight reaction to when I first started going to shows at like the little punk club or whatever in town, and there was that whole kind of 90s wave of like super slacker.
Yeah.
Like everything, you know, it's kind of getting back to that, but everything had to be ironic and everything had to be kind of like, oh, I don't really.
No effort.
Yeah. I don't really play guitar. I don't really do this.
Like, right.
Oh, I just do this because I'm serving coffee or whatever.
Right.
And to me, I always felt like once I decided I want to do this for my life and I was really going to do it.
When was that?
I mean,
14?
Maybe not quite. I mean, I always wanted to do it from when I started. I always assumed eventually I would have to do something else because it might not work out financially or whatever. But I guess I always felt like if you're going to do it, like there's nothing wrong with taking it seriously and like trying your best. And
sure. You know. So if you're 14, what was the process of writing for you then, and what were you trying to do? I mean, what were you listening to that made you go, holy shit, there's power in that?
Yeah, it was actually a local thing, because there was this one great record store called the Antiquarium, which sadly it no longer exists, but that was where we would all go. And
who's we?
Like my brothers and our friends.
How many brothers you got?
Two older brothers.
Oh, so you had the gift of the older brother.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's helpful when you want to learn about music.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then you know, kind of their groups of friends would let me tag along and
the
stuff.
Dude at the store, I bet.
Yeah. So there was a certain novelty to the fact that I wrote songs,
right?
And I came in there and I was really, you know, really little or whatever, so they let me kind of bum around. And there was he still makes amazing records. I always try to talk about him because he's
who's
sort
this?
Of a hidden treasure, but his name is Simon Joyner.
Uh-huh.
And he's amazing. I mean, he's probably made like 20.
He worked at the record store?
No, he was a songwriter in town.
Okay.
And big early influence on me, still to this day. I always wait. He puts out a record probably once a year, you know.
He's still local.
Yep. And
have you taken him out with you?
Yeah, several times. And he's got he's got like a cult following kind of all over the world. Very famously, once John Peel, the famous, you know, DJ, played like one of his albums start to finish, which I guess he had never, or he'd only done a couple times in like the history of his show or whatever. But anyway, he was a local guy that really meant a lot to me, and I sort of tried to model myself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was it about him though? What was the you know, there's something about those local guys where you like, there's the excitement of like, you know, no one knows about this guy and he's like the best.
To us it was kind of the opposite. It was like, he's the biggest.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
Now it's changed. As you get older, you're like, wow, no.
Right.
Yeah,
I know. And, and truly, he got me to, you know, he got me to probably those other songwriters like Townes Van Zandt, like Dylan, like, you know, Prine, like whatever, just all those kind of true sort of.
What were his themes? What was his style? What would you compare it to?
I would say it's, you know, it's definitely folk. based. Yeah. His early records were just guitar and voice, and then since then he's made a lot of records with bands. And
folk is tricky, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's
because would you consider yourself a folk musician from the start? Because those Bright Eyes records aren't really folk records.
I mean, I actually would, in the sense of like when I think of my songs, the song itself is hopefully sturdy enough to exist apart from whatever arrangement or whatever production
it. That's right.
And so you want, you know, for me, it's like the song is the obviously the vocal melody, the chord progression, and the lyrics. And I think if a song is, you know, worth its salt, you should be able to play it just on a guitar or on a piano, and it should still make sense. You know,
you can overproduce it and put some drums on there.
And we've done a lot of that, you know. But yeah, I always think of it as kind of like, you know, once the song exists, it's like standing like naked in front of some kind of giant walk-in closet, and there's like a million outfits you could dress it up in.
Well, I think that's true. I think that's what's interesting about, you know, even watching you the other night, that, you know, the choice for whatever this tour was, yeah, it struck me, you know, once it really got going and on some of the faster tunes, that, you know, it's a country band. Really?
Yeah, I mean, we had the pedal steel and everything going, yeah.
I mean, you know, you had the whole thing. And there was that kind of romping 1-4-5 thing.
Sure.
That is sort of like, that's like honky-tonk music.
Yeah, yeah.
So the choice was, but then I realized, like, as a singer-songwriter, it's an interesting place to be, because that is that's foremost what you do. And then you're sort of like, well, what are we going to do with it?
Yeah.
And it's really up to you. And it seems like you've chosen a lot of different things.
Yeah,
it's hard to pigeonhole you.
I mean, yeah, I think that for me, a big part of keeping the excitement and making records is, you know, collaborating with different people and trying, you know, just experimenting within, you know, I think it has to make sense. Like, sometimes, like, just experimenting to make something weird isn't that interesting to me. But if you can experiment and make it cool and different, but still keep the essence of the song and like,
well, it was sort of like, I like that about the Bright Eyes records, is that, you know, there are these interludes of conversation or phone messages or things. Yeah. But I always like it. I don't know if it was calculated, but I was listening to it the day before yesterday, one of the early records, where I'm like, there's always a chick around. There's always a chick around, like either like talking or laughing. But it just seems like there's at least one or two girls hanging around the band.
Well, we've had a lot of girls in the band over the years.
Yeah, so. There's vocals on some of those.
Yeah. So yeah, we've been blessed to know a lot of pretty badass female musicians.
So when did the struggle begin with whatever the hell it is that you were trying to solve with your words? Because do you know?
I mean, I think it's still happening, you know.
Because like I listened to the words, and I'm not a big lyrics guy. It's weird. I don't know why. I'm a melody guy, and I'm
really, that's that would surprise me, just because
I'm a wordy guy.
Yeah,
I'm a thinky guy.
Yeah.
Well, but the primary problem is if I can't understand them pretty easily, and I got to go back over and over again. Like I've been recently trying to write some stuff. I've written poetry and I've written a book and I've done that.
Yeah.
But songwriting is a whole other animal, you know. And there's some part of my brain after, you know, 25 years as a comic and and doing this, I'm sort of like, nah, I want to write some songs. So I was listening to what songcraft really is. They have to be upfront for me to lock in.
Gotcha.
Like, I got to be able to hear it. If it's a problem, like, I never understood why so many records are mixed. So they're like, why can't you understand the vocals?
Well, most of the time, that's because I think people are insecure about their lyrics.
Yeah.
You know? So that's kind of another sort of thing in, like, whatever modern bloggy fucking music that is annoying to me sometimes, where it's just like there's so much of that reverb and it's drenched on the voice,
right?
And I get it, like the shoegaze, whatever, but it's like, to me, it's like the sign of kind of a self-conscious singer that doesn't want to have anyone have a chance to critique what they're saying or their idea. I mean, I've always been attracted to songs that you can maybe walk away with and still latch onto the melody, but you can also walk away with like ideas. You know, like,
sure, it's provocative.
Like, yeah, like a Leonard Cohen song, or, well, you know, Paul Simon song, or something. You walk away and you're like, whoa, like you're thinking now about things. You know,
there's room in between. There's Leonard more than Paul. There's it's sparse, so you know it's going to provoke whatever it's going to provoke.
Yeah,
but you do a lot of very good turn of phrases, and you know, and it seems like from early on that your sense of emotion and relationship and spiritual struggle was fairly strong early on. Is that something you gleaned from listening to other people, or was that like, here's what I'm getting at, is that, you know, when I write a poem or you work a piece of music, something that has structure like that, it becomes almost like an equation, an emotional equation. So like, I guess my question is, did you reveal yourself to yourself as you wrote, or were you like, I feel this way and I'm gonna, you know?
I think it was probably more the revealing as I went along, or not. No, I mean, clearly not right. knowing what I was doing.
So the words were a surprise. You're like, holy shit.
Yeah. Yes. And they spilled out in very sloppy ways for a long time. And I think just through trial and error of having written, you know, hundreds of songs at this point, I have decided things that I like, and I've got to the point where I'm better at going back and, you know, revising. And a lot of times nowadays I'll write 10 verses to a song, and then the three that I like the most make it into the actual song, where
right.
when I was younger it would be like, it's done, and
do all 10, man.
Yeah, like, all right, that too.
Just that tape doesn't cost much.
Yeah, they make those like 90 minute
yeah, man,
jobs
that right? can be two songs on there, you know. Let's just open it up. But in terms of, like, you know, heartbreak and dealing with, you know, fragile people and dealing with that, the sort of, like, I noticed there's a few songs about, you know, what seemed to me to be, you know, relationships with people that are, you know, maybe nuts.
Yeah.
You know, stuff we all deal with.
Sure, sure.
But do you remember, what was the first song you wrote about?
Well,
was it an experiment, or were you trying? You have an urgency to certainly who you were when you were younger, and I still saw it a bit on stage the other night. There's a bit of a rage there.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think the very, very early songs, surprisingly, aren't. It's not that different from the way it is now, which is you have these little observations that you pick up throughout your daily life,
yeah.
whether it's a conversation with someone or maybe something you see on TV
sure.
or read in the paper
yeah.
or whatever, just these little sort of things that you pick up and notice. And then for me, they kind of collect in the back of my mind and sort of my subconscious. And then, you know, I think that the miracle or whatever of creativity is the way that those things all blend together and then come out in these songs that, I still can't, like, sit down and write a song. You know, if you were to, like, write me a song in half hour or something, I could probably make a song, but it would be not good, you know?
Right.
And so much of it is waiting for that special kind of inspiration that comes.
So just couplets sometimes, even.
Yeah.
You got a notebook with you, and you just chase them down as they hit you.
Yeah. And it's like just some image that, like, sticks in my mind. You know, I always feel like a lot of times I'll sing a song to myself, or I'll have an idea for a song, and then I won't get to the tape recorder, I won't get to the guitar, and then by the next day it's gone. You know,
one of those, like, the worst.
One of those, I couldn't find a pen.
Damn it.
You know.
Yeah.
But I've kind of come to terms with that, in the sense of, like, I feel like, well, maybe those are the ones that weren't meant to be, because I find that the ones that stick with me, that I actually can't shake, and those ideas I can't shake, are the ones that make for better.
Right.
Song.
So you can actually build out from an image. Like, you know, like, you know, if you have a moment where you're like, holy shit, like a little piece yeah. of, you know, fragment of poetry.
Yeah. Yeah, or just something I saw. Like, when I wrote a song one time after I had gone to the pharmacy / liquor store, which
right.
I love how they're the same
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like going, like, with, you know, my girlfriend at the time or whatever, and like going in to like get our vodka or whatever.
Yeah.
And there was those, you know, those, the drive-through lines where people get their medicine
yeah.
out of the window. And I looked over into the window, and I was like, what's that? So weird. There's an old man. Look how tiny that old man is.
Yeah.
And he just looks so strange to me.
Yeah.
Like, he must be, you know, I don't know. He looked like a little old man.
Yeah.
And then we came back out, and I saw him again. I'm like, that's a little kid.
Oh yeah,
that's like a little kid with, like,
a disease.
Cancer. Yeah, like that's yeah, yeah. like a different thing.
Yeah.
than when I first, you
right.
know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And like, that was a thing where I just couldn't shake that experience, you know. And that, I didn't go home and directly, like, write about it, but that was one of those things that stayed in there, and then eventually, like,
what did it become?
It's called Danny Callahan. It's on one of my records. But
I listened to that song.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of in one of the verses of it, but as an example of something that just sort of like you see for a split second, but then it.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, like watching you and Prine, and you know, and thinking about like even Towns, that you know, there are dudes that do thinky stuff, and then there are dudes that tell stories, and you know, like a folk guy is going to do a little of both. But like I noticed that, you know, you're I think you lean towards the thinky.
Mm-hmm. could be, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because like even the on the new record, the song about the kid. You know, that growing up song, that sort of sweet song.
Sure.
That seemed like almost like an exercise in that type of writing for you.
Yeah, that's definitely more of...
What's that song called?
You Are Your Mother's Child.
Yeah.
That was an anomaly. I mean, that one's one I wrote originally for a movie that was about, you know, kind of a father and his messed up relationship with his kids. So I was trying to write a song from the perspective of this father that's essentially saying... You know, singing about his son, and obviously in a loving way, but sort of saying the reason you're so good, and the reason is that you are your mother's child,
right? Like, not me, man.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah.
And so it's kind of like the little twist at the end where it's like,
right?
You see that this is a guy that maybe hasn't been the best father, but he still has a lot of love, you know, for his kid.
So that was actually an assignment almost. It was
kinda
a project.
Yeah. I would say that one.
You like that song?
I mean, that was one that I wasn't sure if I was going to put it on the record because it's definitely more on the sentimental tip. And it's a bit of an outlier.
Yeah.
But I do like it. I mean, I think at the end of the day, I was like, I think it's good for what it is. I don't know.
You
know,
sure.
It's
well, I mean, if you churn out as many songs as you do just sort of innately, how do you know when you, which ones do you love and why? Like if you look back.
And I mean, I don't spend a lot. I mean.
Sometimes you play them.
I do play them. I mean, if I was to pick like, okay, one of my favorite songs that I've written is this song called Cape Canaveral.
Yeah, I like that song, yeah.
Yeah, that's one that I don't know, I mean, I'm kind of picking at random, but that's one that I feel very good about the words and the way it came together, yeah.
And the sort of elements in the chorus and, you know, the span of the lyrics.
Yeah, I like it. It's, you know, it's impressionistic for sure, and it's sort of, it's meant to kind of, I don't know, fly by in a way that's not completely like linear, but I like that.
So like you seem to wrestle with there seems to be points of contention with you, you know, not just politically, but with religion and with the idea of religion that, you know, it seems like a lot of the songs all throughout your career are sort of trying to find that space, if that space exists. There's a lot of equations that you set up poetically that end in the present.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, like, we got this, but the now is where we're at.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I went to, grew up Catholic school and all that.
Did you grow up believing it?
I mean, again, my parents were always pretty cool, so I remember the first time I could really make an argument beyond, like, I want to sleep in.
Yeah.
On Sunday or whatever.
Yeah.
Then my mom was pretty cool to let me. I mean, I remember, like, I don't know how you grew up, but in Catholicism.
Very, very, very easygoing Jew how I was brought up.
Well, Catholicism, there's, like, this thing called confirmation, which you're 12 or whatever.
Yeah.
I guess it's, like, bar mitzvah type vibe.
I get it, yeah.
And so I remember I think you're in sixth grade or seventh grade or something. You're pretty young still. Mm-hmm. And... But it's the idea of the sacrament or whatever is that you are now an adult in the eyes of the faith and you're taking it on as your own.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like saying to my mom, like, I don't believe in this. I don't want to do this. And she was like, well, you're doing it for your grandmother.
Yeah.
So go get your clothes on.
Do it for grandma.
Yeah. So it wasn't, and that was it.
Yeah.
So.
And that was the end of it?
Yeah.
But where do you stand now? Because there is an urgency towards the idea of sort of, I don't know if it's figuring it out, But you know, wherever your emotions are going within a lot of your songs, there seems to be some, you know, need for something beyond the song. You know, where do you land with that?
As far as like spirituality, like
sure. Continue. And you know, I mean, you talk about fate. There's a song that you did the other night that taught you. I think you introduced it.
Yeah,
questioning the idea of fate.
I think it's still something I think about. You know, I think that's just a big part of the human condition. I mean, I think that organized religion has reaped all manners of evil upon this world, and I wish in a lot of ways that it wouldn't exist. I mean, I think
it's also given a lot of people a place to go on Sunday,
and that's true.
Yeah,
no, that's true.
You know,
it's whatever works for everybody. You know, I'm not.
I mean, I get your drift.
Yeah,
but like, you know, where did you ever like? Because I noticed like there's something also I noticed that when I was thinking about even the career of Dylan and in your two solo records, that's where I sort of realized that, you know, the songwriter is going to be the songwriter first and foremost, and then you just got to figure out, you know, how mature you want that music to be behind you, in the sense that, you know, how is it going to fit where I'm at in my life now?
Sure.
Even your old songs, you know, you're choosing this band, they're a solid ass band, you know, and then you choose songs that you're going to play just, you know, on the guitar.
Yep.
And, you know, but they're like, you know, Dylan would sort of publicly, and I think, who else? Well, not Towns, he didn't last long enough, but, you know, Leonard Cohen has sort of evolved into a bit of a Buddha of sorts.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is something as you get older that, you know, you start to, you know, either get comfortable with or not. Mm-hmm. You know, where have you landed with that stuff on a day-to-day basis and keeping your shit together? Or you don't think about it?
I try not to think about it too much. I mean, I guess I'm like, you know, a humanist. I think that like you get what you give kind of thing. And the more love and positivity that you can promote just in your own life amongst your own friends and family and if you can, strangers, you know, the more that you can give that positive energy, I think it is returned, you know. I don't know, that's kind of maybe a hallmark way to look at it, but
well, I mean, do you still feel like, do you struggle with depression or anything?
Yeah, I mean, but doesn't everybody?
To a degree.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, because I just know that, like, who was I talking to? Maybe it was Maynard from Tool or something. Or he said that if you don't believe in magic a little bit, it's hard to be creative.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I still think the wonder and the mystery of things is, you know, one thing that keeps me going. Like, the idea of not, you know, if someone was like, what are you? Are you an atheist or agnostic or whatever? You know, I wouldn't really want any of those labels, but I guess I would say I'm agnostic in the sense of I do think there's things beyond the human scope that we just don't know.
Yeah.
And that...
Thank God.
Yeah.
There, thank whoever.
Yeah. And I don't know about, you know, an eternal soul or life after death or all that shit, but like, I do think we are part of an energy, a greater energy beyond ourselves.
Yeah.
And that there is a way to live. There is a better way to live than other ways, you know. I'm not
Have you made some mistakes?
Sure. Of course. Yeah. But you know, try to learn from them and try to
Well, that's where the songs come from. They gotta come from that after a while.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
So when you think back on you know, the guys that you know have that you like to listen to, like Towns, let's start with him. You know, what was it that impressed you about him outside of like this profound heavy-heartedness that's almost hard to listen to?
Yeah, I mean, it is some of the saddest music ever made. But I guess the way it makes me feel in my heart.
Which song gets you?
Well, I would say there's so many. But you know that song, Miss Carousel, Fairly Well, Miss Carousel? It's on the first one. That's one of my favorite bangers. But I mean, even a song as famous as it is, but Pancho and Lefty, you listen to that song and it's, I mean, it's like, there's those songs that come from some other world, you know, like Mr. Tambourine Man or something. You know, there's these songs that like,
where
it's just like this, it's like there's, I don't know. I mean, it's easy to be like, it's some divine channeling of whatever. And I don't know that that's true, but I do know that some people are able to touch these things, these jewels, these like
Yeah, well, they come just like you said. They come, you know, watching TV.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, like, you know, like a lyric, unlike anything else, is just sort of like you can really start with a line and not even know why.
Yeah, totally. Well, Towns, you know, claims he, like, dreamt that song, and he didn't know what he said. He didn't know what it's about, but it's like, yeah.
Why not tap that shit?
Yeah, totally. I mean,
have you ever written stuff from dream?
I did have one song. I mean, I've dreamt music, but as far as like one that actually was like I could remember and make into a song, is a song of mine called Lime Tree. Mm-hmm. And in my song, or in my dream, a friend of mine who is not a singer at all, has never sang, I never heard him sing, and he was in my dream and he was singing this song, and he had the most beautiful high, like, angelic voice.
Yeah.
And he sang like the whole like verse and chorus like in my dream.
Yeah.
And I woke up and I was on the tour bus, and I like, popped up in my bunk and was like and I got out and I got my guitar.
Yeah.
And I sat in the back lounge and like wrote it pretty much start to finish, like
with the lyrics that he sang. Get out.
Yeah. That was the closest I got into something like
did
that.
Did you tell him about it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, what did he
say? He was stoked.
Was this a childhood friend or not a music guy?
It is a music guy. It's this guy named Nick White who plays in bands, but he's just like a piano player. And uh-huh. stuff. So I had never heard him sing.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's hilarious. And what about like when you listen to Dylan, you know, like which song kills you? Like, because I know like a couple of Dylan songs that kill me. Like the Visions of Joanna is like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like there, and It's All Right, Ma. Those two songs, like I'm like, all the answers are in those two.
Totally. There's, yeah, It's All Right, Ma is the one I think, you ever see that Ed Bradley interview he did, like 60 Minutes, like a Dylan interview he did kind of late, like this is like in sort of recent history. I mean, I guess maybe 10 years ago or something.
He's hard to talk to.
But yeah, and then he starts.
I did see that actually.
But it's an incredible interview, but he starts quoting that song, and he's like, you try to do that.
Yeah.
He's like, that's magic. That's not Siegfried and Roy magic. That's real magic, you know.
That's what Dylan said?
Yeah, it's like something like only something he could say, but he was like, you try to do that.
Well, I think he's sort of like, I think he eventually became kind of rightfully, you know, defending like, you know, I don't know where this comes from.
Yeah.
But I'm the guy that's delivering it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he also says in that interview about how he's like, I can't do that anymore.
Yeah,
like I can do other things, but I can't do that anymore.
He got more sparse.
Yeah,
as he got older, you know, like some of that later stuff is pretty good.
I mean, I still think "Time Out of Mind" is like one of his best albums.
It's great record. Yeah, the production on thing is trippy, man. You feel like you feel like you're in the like some sort of tunnel.
Yeah,
that that the light's dimming at the end of. Like that was the first time you realized like, nah, Dylan knows he's running out of time, right?
Yeah, there's a beautiful like. Swampy heaviness to that record that's in like all the because I think that's a Lenoir one those reverbs and stuff just really take you into a different world, you know.
What music did you grow up with primarily, like what was your old man into outside of practice and his cover tunes?
I mean, they were like, you know, Fleetwood Mac, Steely Dan, you know, mm-hmm. Joni Mitchell, Jackson Browne, you know, some to a certain degree, like definitely Neil to a certain degree, Dylan and stuff, and like
Neil,
Elvis Costa, definitely Neil for sure. Oh, and Paul Simon.
Paul Simon's like those Paul Simon solo records, even that first one.
It's like one of my favorites. It was right the hood on
record, man.
Dude, I know
that song Duncan kills me.
Yeah, that whole album is like beautiful.
It's crazy. Yeah, like my parents used to play that on the 8-track when we were kids.
Yeah,
so like it was plowed into my head.
Yeah,
but A Peace Like a River.
Oh yeah,
what the fuck?
Oh. Long past midnight curfew, we sat starry-eyed.
So sweet. Yeah. Like something about that song, Duncan, about that guy getting laid.
Yeah, getting into the tent with like the hippie girl.
Yeah, like I was like literally in the back of a station wagon as a kid going like, I know what's happening.
Yeah.
It was like a turn on.
Yeah.
God damn.
A lot of great ones.
But you seem to have some like other influences that kind of ring throughout the music all the way, like, I mean, a little rap, a little punk somewhere.
Absolutely. The stuff, like I was saying, from that record store and this place in mm-hmm. town that was like the, you know, this little like hole in the wall punk rock club.
Right.
We saw a lot of, I guess, what you'd call punk or hardcore, indie rock, whatever the hell they called it at that time. But there was definitely a lot of that, and like, you know, deep love for like Replacements and, you know, that kind of stuff. So
sure, man.
Yeah.
But you, like, you do, but you, it doesn't seem like in listening that, like, I noticed any real attempt at a pop hook per se, but it didn't seem to concern you that much early on.
No, I wrote for a long time. None of my songs had any words that repeated. So every chorus would be different
right.
words.
And that was intentional.
Kind of, yeah. Or maybe one line would repeat, but for the most part, I was trying to, yeah, use every last bit of real estate for more words, you know?
Yeah.
And so I didn't, it was a long time before I sort of realized there's something nice about going back to a refrain.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
There's something nice about repeating some words.
Sure. Gives people a chance to sing along.
Yeah.
give the people a chance to sing along.
Yeah.
And you're a folk musician.
Exactly. And they can feel, and it can feel really good to get back to that spot, you know? But I also get bored with, like, you know, obviously on top 40 radio and stuff where there'll be two lines of a verse and then you're back to the chorus and then now we're back to like the fifth chorus and it's the same words and
repetition and hypnosis.
Now it's like they didn't even sing it five times. They sang it once and then they put it all in there.
So, bro,
cut and paste, and it just sucks, you know. And
does suck,
and it's hard to like. It's hard to relate to that stuff. And I think it is, I mean, there is like a human psychological condition about, you know, familiarity is equated to enjoyment, mm-hmm. like in the human mind. You know, if you repeat things.
It's comforting.
Just, yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's
the, oh, there it is again.
And that's the way, I mean, that's the way all, you know, commercial radio works is they play, you know, they play the same, whatever it is, 16 right. songs, however many times a day.
I don't even know what it is anymore.
And so it could matter less what the song sounds like, because for people that listen to like terrestrial radio, they're going to hear the same cut that many times to the point where it's just like, I must like this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I know it.
Yeah, they keep
like
playing it.
Yeah, and it's like a nice, comfortable shoe.
And then people must like it.
Yeah.
I must not be alone.
Yeah.
They keep playing it.
Totally.
It's weird. I've had some experiences listening to classic rock radio in recent times. I got into vinyl again where I'm completely surprised at how many of some artists' songs I know and just how fucking much better they are than I ever thought.
Yeah.
Like do you ever have that moment with Creedence where you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, they have amazing...
And that guy meant it, man. He sang his balls off.
Yeah.
And, like, some of that stuff is, like, raw, dude.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Who do you like to hear when it pops up on the radio?
You know...
Are you a Petty guy?
Oh, I love Petty.
Right?
Oh, it's love.
Did you ever play with him?
Love Petty. I haven't. I know Ben Mott a little
bit. Sweet guy. I had him in here.
Yeah, and I've been able to see some great Petty shows, but... No, I don't. I haven't never met Tom himself. So,
but you did play with Bruce.
I play with Bruce, who's an amazing, gracious, awesome person, and
he's an interesting guy. Like, I would imagine for someone like you, who is sort of like, kind of like, had to come around full circle to sort of see himself as a folk musician, like, because I think he likes that. Like, as he got older and he did...
I mean, he had the new Dylan thing thrown on him, you know?
Right, but he was coming from such a tradition of, like, you know, like East Coast R&B and...
Totally, that soul, that Greetings from Asbury Park, which I love, is like, it's like a soul record.
It's almost like a Van Morrison record.
Yeah, totally.
It sounds like a fucking Van Morrison record.
Yeah, it's that you know that song, For You? There's a song called For You. For you, I came for you. But you did not need my urgency. That sounds, that's a banger.
You did not need my urgency.
Yeah.
Those are like, you got a lot of lines like that. With these, like, just these little lines, you're like, oh, jeez. Yeah. That must have hurt that guy.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun when I like writers that don't always kind of telegraph their punches, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
they'll
yeah.
be like, they kind of got you.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, this one comes like the
subtle.
Yeah.
Yeah,
then,
yeah, yeah.
And then that one comes out of the blue and just like hits.
Right, and sometimes it's not like it's just the precision of it.
Yeah.
It's not may not be an elaborate word, but the emotion is
it's like boxing, man.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Turning the phrase.
Yeah.
So that's like boxing.
Yeah.
Was a lot of your compulsive, it seems, songwriting when you were younger to sort of, you know, kind of manage anger, manage darkness? Manage frustration?
I guess so. I mean, I always felt and still feel that, to me, a lot of my day to day, I feel like I have a pretty scatterbrained, you know? Like,
yeah.
I'm not like an airhead, but I definitely, my mind wanders a lot and
yeah.
I'm prone to daydreams and
right.
maybe not paying attention all the time.
Yeah.
And so writing is a form of, for me to kind of get to some clarity, you know, and if I can put it down and it makes sense to me, it doesn't have to make sense to anyone else, but if it makes sense to me, it makes me feel a little more, you know, attached
yeah.
to this reality.
Sure.
Then I
hands on.
Yeah. Then it's a force of good for myself, you know.
You're so not drifting off.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
the head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know that one where you're like, I haven't talked to anybody in a day or two. Yeah. And I'm yep. okay. That's the scary part.
Yeah.
I'm okay not talking.
Yeah.
But is your brother's in the music racket too?
Nope. My brothers are not in, they're not in the music business. My one brother, Justin, helped start the label very, very early on.
Uh-huh.
But after that, he, you know, went on to like law school and,
yeah,
he lives in DC and does like,
is he lawyer, a good guy or a bad guy?
No, he works for a like environmental consulting law thing, which sounds like a good thing, but
yeah,
I think sometimes they
trying to bend the rules.
Saying there's some of that.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a very good person, but I think his job, and then the nature of the beast out there is
sure.
pretty crazy.
And what's the other brother doing?
And the other brother is a teacher.
All right.
Yeah.
And your folks go around?
Yep. They have now moved to the East Coast to be closer to the
grandkids. Yeah.
And actually, one of the things I feel best, or one of the, I guess, an accomplishment I suppose I feel good about is I was able to, my dad from, because I always had stuff going on like taxes and record contracts and stuff I didn't understand when I was young. And he would just do all that stuff for me because he didn't want me to end up, you know, in jail for like tax
yeah.
evasion. So he
right.
would help me and did that for years and years while he worked at Mutual of Omaha.
Yeah.
And then one day I got to the point where my other like manager was like, okay, now you need to get a business manager. It's just, you have to. This is stupid.
I know, I just hit that myself.
Yeah, yeah,
it's hard.
It's getting stupid to not have one. And I just asked my dad to do it. I was like, Dad, will you quit your job and I'll pay you a salary and you can do all this stuff that you're already doing for me, but you won't have to go up into the Indian in the Sky building anymore and
yeah.
like, be up there in that weird cubicle. Like,
and he took the gig?
He did it. So
your dad's on the payroll.
Yeah.
That's good, man.
And it's awesome, you know, because it's, you know.
You don't have to worry about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's your dad.
Totally.
And you get along with him.
And he's like the most, you know, pragmatist, like Midwestern, like solid dude. So like, I'm always like, why shouldn't we be able to like get around some of this like,
yeah,
tax stuff. Like, well, yeah. Sorry, not to.
Got to pay the government.
Yeah,
got to do your part. It's your civic duty. Well, it's interesting when you start making money. Where your politics end up. That's where people change. You know.
No.
That's where idealism. Idealism. You know, dies at the tax man.
That's true. I can remember getting my first like advance for like a publishing deal when I was like probably like 19 or something, and I don't know what it was. It was like $50,000 or something. And I thought I was the richest person that had like ever lived.
Yeah. Well, you get about 20 of that.
Yeah, exactly. And then I remember that being explained to me. I'm like, well, actually.
Yeah.
What? Like, oh, yeah. And it'd be one thing if it was like, oh, we all had beautiful public schools and like,
sure.
you know,
yeah.
swimming pools and
yeah.
Whatever for like everyone to use
yeah.
and like roads that worked and
right.
public transportation. But that's
not the case. Hard
exactly.
to track that money.
I know.
That you didn't get.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's when it does become political pretty fast because you're like, what the hell? Like, what? That's, you know, let's do something with all that besides like build bombs to like, you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but I think that's interesting. It's not whatever. It's interesting to me that other band that you have, your rock band,
mm-hmm.
what's that called again?
Desaparecidos.
Yeah.
We've only made one record. And it was back in like 2001
uh-huh.
or two, and And but we're about to make a new one.
What's going
to
happen?
It's going to happen next year.
So. Now, what do you see that project as? What can you do with them that you can't do on your own?
Well, it's a band. It's a real band in the sense of it's the same five guys.
Yeah.
And it's everyone has their role, and we write those songs. We write all together, like uh-huh. in the band room. You know, the other guitar player is, you know, kind of more of a riff based guitar player, so he comes up with these cool
right.
rock riffs, and then we all start playing loud and I start screaming nonsense, and then eventually like I write words to uh-huh. match the melody. But so yeah, it's I guess it's more of, you know, being together and all of our ideas, you know, combining to make that band what it is. But it is very all the songs are very, you know, topical, and I wouldn't say they're all political, but they're all topical.
Well, the weird thing is about, you know, folk music and the sort of populist responsibility mm-hmm. of, you know, what was the, you know, certainly the Woody Guthrie side of the folk movement.
Sure.
It kind of leans on you guys a little bit. Like at some point you're going to hit that juncture where you're like, I better say something for the people,
yeah.
to the people.
Yeah.
Like there's a social responsibility to folk in a way.
Yeah. Well, back in, you know, 2004 or 2005, I had this song called When the President Talks to God, and it wasn't on a record or anything, and I wrote it after doing the, we did the, because you were part of the whole Air America yeah. thing and all that, right?
Yeah, I was there.
So anyway, there was that Vote for Change tour, which right. is when I was on tour with Springsteen and REM and John Fogerty, and we did all these shows, and we were trying to get Kerry and that other guy elected,
mm-hmm.
And we, you know, it felt, worked really hard, kind of, my heart was in it, you know, I was young, naive,
right.
and wanted it to work out, and it didn't, and I was, of course, devastated, and I remember I had just finished my record, and I was going to Europe to do a press thing, you know, you gotta go to these straight press tours.
Yeah.
Which is like my least favorite part of it, go and just get interviewed right. in all these different countries. And
yeah.
that was at the height of just like the Europeans definitely hating Bush and
right.
Iraq war and everything, rightfully so. And he had just got reelected. And I was just like, man, I'm going to go and this is all they're going to want to talk about.
Yeah.
And I was very bummed out. But Bruce, being as sweet as he is, like called my cell phone. I'm like at the airport.
Springsteen?
Yeah, to get on the plane. And he's just like, now, Connor, you go over there and you tell them there's half of us that don't believe in this, and there's a real America over here, and we're going to fight really hard. You know, gave me this like pep talk, like in the airport, which is so cool.
Dude.
And I was like, all right, Bruce, I'm going to do it.
Yeah,
so I cruised over there, and I like basically on the plane, and shortly after I'd landed, I wrote that song really quick, and it's a terrible song. It's not a good song. It's just kind of like a talking blues, like,
yeah.
you know, fuck George W., basically.
Right.
But it felt like as you say, like an obligation. Like I felt like I had to do something
sure.
to, you know, just to, it was more of a commercial for like the idea that there was a whole nother half of
yeah.
Americans that felt the opposite,
sure.
you know, and trying to like.
But you got orders from the boss.
Exactly.
The boss called you before you made the trip.
Exactly. So.
Do you still have that relationship with him?
I mean, whenever I see him or run into him, he's always gracious and uh-huh. awesome. Like he played Omaha once and I was there and he like got me up on stage and stuff. So yeah, but I mean, we're not like
yeah,
chatting
yeah,
on
yeah.
the phone all
right,
the time.
Right,
or anything.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting because Dylan was very good at balancing all that shit and coding it in, you know, sort of broader existential terms,
mm-hmm.
you know, like
yeah.
he was really kind of amazing at being vague and concise at the same time, you know, and
yeah.
I think you nail that too sometimes, like, you know, it could be about anything. You're going to take that lyric and, you know, it's going to go in, like you said before, it's going to provoke whatever it's going to provoke in you.
Yeah. And there's, I think the truth of it is that the political and the personal will always be intertwined.
Yeah.
And so if you can tell, you know, a human story, and maybe the subtext is a political issue.
Yeah.
But you can figure out a way to communicate that to a
right.
to a listener without, you know, being so on the nose, which I've been, you know, not so successful at on some of my songs, but that's just part of learning about that
yeah,
stuff.
But you write so many. So yeah. you're going to, you know, and you're growing up. You're growing up in public. You're growing up with your music. I mean, you know, not everybody starts at fucking 15 and has to somehow wrangle that shit.
Yeah.
I mean, you're like, you're a grown ass man now.
I know, baby. 34.
Yeah. And you got married.
Yep.
What was that bullshit you had to deal with that crazy girl?
Yeah, it was a very surreal.
How did that unfold?
Well, somebody wrote a very horrible lie about me anonymously on a comment section.
Yeah.
And then the sort of
accused you of rape.
Yes.
Some girl. You don't know her.
No.
Yeah.
And the blogosphere
went crazy
and did their thing. And it was very painful. The world was like upside down for a little bit, and I just kind of...
Did you detach from it? What were you instructed to do?
Well, eventually we filed like a libel lawsuit.
Yeah.
And then eventually she recanted and said that it was all a lie and it was a hoax. And, you know, it's
amazing how quickly that...
Yeah, I mean, it taught me a lot I've always sort of hated the kind of depravity of our current internet culture.
The feeding frenzy?
Yeah.
The predatory feeding frenzy?
Yeah, and the way that people, you know, it's just, there's zero journalistic standards to anything.
Nothing.
So,
none.
So it's basically a game of telephone.
Yeah.
That goes on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But like,
no one's credited.
Yeah.
No facts are checked.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was really hard. And at this point, I'm just kind of trying to put it in the rearview mirror. I mean, there's still like, you know, echoes in my mind for sure.
Sure.
But I also want to, you know, I want to put in perspective because, you know, I think about all the many African American men who are in prisons right now for crimes they didn't commit, you know, and for actual victims of sexual assault that has done the greatest disservice to.
Right.
You know, and what, you know, they say one out of four women will experience sexual assault in their lifetime, and like that's staggering.
It's
and
crazy.
Fucking horrible.
So there's something about those feelings, you know, that you know, falsely accused by just I mean, has that played into any songs?
You know, I really haven't written any songs. Like I think I'm still processing it. You know, I think
do
it's
you write
still...
from that place though? Have you written about like outside of poetic personal experiences, but you know, like real struggle? Are you gonna, how long have you been married?
It'll be 4 years in December.
Has that informed your love songs?
Yeah. I mean, I think life experience is going to play subconsciously into that creative process. I mean, definitely being married has, I think, made me a more patient, like happier person and like less rushing around like feeling like manic about, you know, I was just a workaholic for years and years and years, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't think, I, you know, breathed music all the time.
Yeah.
And now I've gotten to the point where I realize, you know, there's other important, you know, as important things.
You're going
to
have a baby?
In the world. We got a puppy.
You're going to have a baby. You're going to have one.
I don't know.
You got to. I didn't have one.
I don't know, man. I mean, it's talking about all that and like technology in the future. It scares me. You know, I don't like to.
What about love though, Connor? You know, sometimes you got to bring it in.
I know they say that and like, well, you got to have kids and raise them right and all that. But I don't know. I just see these like, they're all kind of half robots now, like these little like toddlers with their iPads.
Go off the grid.
Go
buy yourself a house in the hills, man.
Go to the mountains.
Make it sparse.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what was that song that I listened to about the, you know, freedom and love? Is that on the new record?
Yep.
That's a good one.
Yep. Yeah, freedom's the opposite of love because you can never keep it through your paranoia.
Yeah,
which I think is true. If you love someone, you're always worried about them and everything. So.
That's interesting. And with freedom, you're just sort of like, what does it really mean, right?
Foot loose and fancy free.
Kinda, right? Yeah. I mean, but in a bigger sense, you know, what is the cost of freedom? You know, what is the price of it, and what is it really?
Yeah,
you know, I don't. It's such big shit.
Yeah, and it's definitely like alluring. Like the idea of. You know, and I feel like I lived that way for a long time where I was just, you know, not that I didn't have obligations, but I could kind of do what I wanted whenever I wanted. And I didn't stay in a town for more than like a few weeks at a time, like literally for years.
Yeah.
And I guess I I don't care to like really do that anymore.
Well, yeah. The you know the loneliness of that.
Yeah.
Of not you know being anchored or making those kind of commitments to yeah. to other person and having that trust and building that stuff. I mean, yeah, it depletes the meaning of things.
Yeah.
It's like what was that song that you know the road. What is it? The road will cure. What is it?
The
road.
Nothing the road cannot heal.
Yeah, yeah, but, you know, that's weird.
And that might not be true. That might not be a true statement.
Well, no, but healing is an interesting thing because yeah. that doesn't mean that you ain't going to be scarred.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, I think it holds.
Totally. Well, I love that Towns line where he says, there's nothing prettier than looking back at a town you left behind.
Yeah.
So, that's when I've said to myself many right, time.
Well, let's end it there, man. It's good talking to you.
Thank you.
We're going to play a song, right?
I'd be happy to. He's my friend, but he's no friend to me. Just ask him why he'll tell you casually. Washed up, bitter, broken, busted, backstabbed everyone he trusted. Says he sees what no one else can see. But if I had half his guts, I'd want it to chase that fatalistic comet and die young in the dark. That's poetry. But it was not to be. No, it was not for me. He's always sad, but I've never seen him cry. When he comes to sure, he'll apologize. Find his car, assess the damage. Still drunk, but he likes a challenge. Holds on to his mind just like a kite. But a good strong wind will keep you honest, fill you with some common knowledge. Things when we were young we never tried. I figured we had time with such a long life. Money clips, alligator shoes. Just one more dance, he's in that champagne room. Where she moves like a chocolate fountain, pouring, spilling all around him. Makes him wonder what else she can do. But how bittersweet is love's illusion. Feelings that cannot be proven. Just trust me, you'll see my aim is true. I've done this all for you. I suffered long. So many times he tried to play it straight. He just worked and worked in till his body ached.
But a brand new life will lose its luster. Troubles tend to find each other. Call it luck, or you can call it fate. But either way, it's how it happens, not the life that you imagine. So just go out with a bang like Hemingway. Some will say you're brave, some will say you ain't.
Yeah. Awesome, man.
Cool.
Sounded great.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing it.
My pleasure.
That was nice. Guy's got a knack. Got a knack for that songwriting. Connor Oberst does. Go to WTF Pod and do all your WTF Pod needs. Get some posters. Get on the mailing list. Check my tour schedule at the calendar. Check who's been on the show. Pick up the app. Perhaps. I think we go straight into the amp with the Buddha. The 335. Straight in. Tube Distortion, 335, the Buddha. Yeah, Boomer lives!
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort, auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowerte-Dienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowerte-Dienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.